Tim Anderson has 36 years in broadcast engineering. He joined Harris Broadcast in Mason, Ohio, as the radio product line manager and currently the manager of radio product development. Prior to joining Harris, he served as broadcast systems engineer with Ubiquity Digital Corporation. While there, he assisted in the development, deployment, and testing of the HD radio transmission system. Previously, he was an applications engineer for Avid Technology, a consulting engineer, and a chief engineer of several major market stations and production facilities. Mr. Anderson has published numerous technical articles on the subject of digital radio transmission. He holds several certifications from the Society of Broadcast Engineers, including CPBE, the DRB certification, and CBNT. He currently also serves on the SBE National Board of Directors. Please welcome Mr. Tim Anderson.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for the introduction, Steve. Appreciate that. Well, really nice to be here in Wisconsin with you. Just flew in, and boy, are my arms tired. Okay, well, let's get started. I wanted to bring you something today, a little bit about where we are with HD radio in the next generation, the fourth generation developments that both Ubiquity and the manufacturers are working on. It's been my pleasure for the last 5 years or so at Harris to work with a lot of new developments in transmitters and HD radio. Prior to that, as Steve mentioned, I was with Ubiquity, and a lot of what I did at Ubiquity was help develop the advanced services applications, a lot of the testing on that, and we're starting to see the fruits of those labors today with the artist experience and some of the other great new features that are coming out in HD radio. But I thought it'd be fun to take a moment here and look back at what we've been up to in the past and kind of where it's taken us, and then we'll talk a little bit about where we're going. I had a little bit of mouth surgery a couple of days ago and it's still not working quite right, but we'll try and get through this. So, as we've been getting more and more commercial acceptance out there in the marketplace, the HD radio's taken on more notice. We just kind of got the news at the radio show that by next year, we expect 50% of the automobiles, the new automobiles to come out in the 2013 and 2014 model years to incorporate HD radio as standard equipment in the cars. So big news, HD radio is becoming accepted. That's a double-edged sword because for a little while, HD radio has been evolving from a science fair project into an actual commercial entity. And so now, broadcasters and our listeners are taking notice and they're demanding more robust solutions, simpler installations, and more cost-effective transmission systems than what we had in the past. So today what we're going to talk about is some of the past systems, how we got here, the present systems, and then we'll talk about what the future has got in store for all of us. First of all, advances in digital signal processing have changed everything. Moore's Law is certainly in effect in DSP. And it's reducing the cost, the size, the complexity of the systems that we use. And that's what we need as we go into an era where the systems are expected to perform flawlessly 24/7 and zero defects are absolutely demanded. Hasn't always been the case with HD radio. The current generation of systems and all of the signal generation functions, the audio intake, the multiplexing, all of the encoding, the modulation. Right now, they require a separate importer, exporter, and something called the X-Gen, the modulator inside the exciter. And these are all very diverse architectures, completely different architectures across the system, as we're going to take a look at. In the fourth generation, what we're working towards is integrating all these functions into a single, configurable, embedded DSP-based device or devices of very similar architecture. and adding all of the expected functionality within that architecture, such as the hybrid crest factor reduction, asymmetrical sideband generation, modulation error ratio measurements to get actual quantifiable signal quality measurements, all of this embedded into the system. But let's take a look back, where we came from. This was the first HD radio exciter. This is what we lovingly call the Gen 1 HD radio system. Some of you may remember it, some of you may have seen it. It was developed by USA Digital, who was actually the predecessor of the companies that formed to form Ubiquiti. They did this back in 1988 as a proof of concept. There were three or four of these units built. It also had a companion radio receiver for HD. These were really highly custom boxes. They were basically 14 analog devices, Shark processors, running on a PC-104 bus. I've seen a couple of these. They were a wiring nightmare, a lot of boards tied together with a lot of spaghetti wire, very, very fragile. Very complex, not something that you would ever deploy commercially, but for the initial tests, for the first rollouts of the HD radio testing, they served us well. They made an HD radio signal. FM HD, but just the HD signal. They did use the AAC codec and did not use the spectral band replication or SBR for the audio compression. And all the way through 2001, the early testing of all the iBox systems that were done at Zetron Labs in Cincinnati and the original tests for the FCC MPRM were also done using this Generation 1 exciter. Also, some tests were done, very early, very primitive tests. Jeff Mendenhall back there in the back of the room remembers these well. At the University of Illinois in Champaign, we put one of these on the air using a modified Harris VHF TV transmitter because it was basically the only thing linear enough to actually pass the HD radio signal. And that was all done with the Gen 1 exciter and a TV transmitter. Then in 2000, Ubiquiti and Harris started discussions on the development of a real implementable, manufacturable, second-generation HD radio exciter that could be the potential for something that we would actually bring to the marketplace. And that introduced the Gen 2 PC-based exciter, the Box. In 2001, Ubiquiti built the very first one. It was a Pentium 4 processor. With hard drives, memory, it used several up-conversion boards and digital processing boards. It was a lot less temperamental than the Gen 1, but only less temperamental, still pretty temperamental overall. This actually became the mainstay. For the next 4 years, the reference exciter was really the workhorse of all the HD radio testing and rollout efforts. Stations actually went on the air with these in quite a few markets. And some of these are actually still around in the labs. We actually have one or two left still at Harris, and Ubiquiti still has about a half a dozen. They all had names, too. They were named after, I believe it was dinosaurs. Each one had its own name. We all knew them intimately enough that each one had its own name. What you're looking at here, this one is Bayberry that we're looking at. But some of these are still around and still in use today, and actually quite useful for certain things because they had all the diagnostic test capability in them and could do error measurements that receivers, very few receivers, can still do today. All of the NRSC testing was done on these boxes. So it was these boxes that gave us the wherewithal to develop the HD radio standards that we know today. What was in it? Well, first of all, we call it a monolithic exciter. This box contained all of the hardware and software that we needed to create the FM, on-channel FM signal, and also the HD RF signals, or in the case of AM, the complete AM plus the HD in the form of mag and phase, and it had audio inputs. So basically it was a standalone box that did all the necessary processing. For FM, it only did the HD portion, and you had to do external combining to get the combined FM and HD. AM generated the entire waveform together. But you basically had the Pentium motherboard. It was a P4, very complex digital up converter to get out the AM mag and phase and also the FM IF outputs. And then to get actually on carrier FM, you had an RF up converter. And then all the things that the station needs, the general purpose ins and outs, the audio interfaces. This contained a hard disk and quite a bit of RAM. And this was around for quite a while. It ran at 3 gigahertz. It also had its own AES cards, highly specialized at the time, AES audio cards. And of course, the inevitable CD drive to upload the very frequent software updates. It ran on Linux, Linux Mandrake, in fact, and that was the Ubiquiti Reference Software System, or the IRSS, as it came to be fondly known. I think we got up to IRSS 6 before we started standardizing and changed the format of that. Originally, it employed the PAC codec from Bell Labs, but there was a lot of maneuvering that went on, a lot of testing that went on, and found PAC may not have been the best codec overall, and it was later migrated to what's now called the HD codec, or the HDC. Very similar to AAC, it's a derivative of AAC. We also added the SBR that's all still in use today. Based on this design and moving forward, Harris was the first to actually introduce a commercial FM and AM exciter for HD radio. The Dextar could do HD only for either AM or FM, and it was based on those earlier Gen 2 exciters with a few enhancements to make it a little more user-friendly in the radio station. Now, in 2002, Ubiquiti was experimenting, and they bought a little company called the Command Audio Group. And Command Audio developed Windows applications for audio. And one of the applications that they had was a PC-based audio multiplexer. Ubiquiti saw this and said, maybe we could actually use this to multiplex multiple channels and have multiple channels within the HD signal. But they needed a multiplexer, so they purchased Command Audio and developed this multiplexer, which then became known as the importer. It was still a science experiment, and this is about the time I was coming on with Ubiquiti. NPR and Harris started talking about this. They got wind of the developments that we were doing over at Ubiquiti and actually began to talk about and promote the idea of commercializing HD radio multicasting, the HD2, HD3, HD4. Back then it was affectionately known as the Tomorrow Radio Project. So that was the auspicious beginnings of the importer. So in 2003, Harris brought out the first commercial program importer. Boys and girls, it was a PC. It was, in fact, it was a Pentium 4 running Windows on a basically a server-grade P4 motherboard. And it subdivided, it allowed us to control the bandwidth and subdivide the bandwidth into multiple segments to provide the multiple audio and data services. So this was really the beginning of multicasting for HD. Two additional program services were added, and these also supported the ancillary data services like the iTunes tagging and Now Artist Experience for album art and graphics, also news and weather. A lot of big plans for this multicasting, data casting service that could be implemented by the importer and its multiplexing capability. Now, at the same time, there were quite a few other developments going on around HD radio. Manufacturers were developing entirely new systems in order to support the HD radio deployment. Transmitter manufacturers, for one, began to actually build FM HD specific transmitters by building transmitters that could switch between Class C for analog FM and Class AB for linearized amplifiers to provide on-the-fly switching between FM analog and HD radio. HD-specific high-power transmitters like the HTHD, for example, or the Z16HD, were common amplification transmitters. In other words, you could take the composite analog FM plus the HD together and amplify them in one transmitter. This made for a lot of economies and a lot simpler systems. We also brought about the DAX transmitter. It was really one of the first AM transmitters with the linearity required for AM HD radio broadcast. So common amplification, split level combining were all coming about at this same time frame. Trying to increase the efficiency and increase the simplicity of the systems. Also, pre-correction started coming about, being able to linearize and control the distortion artifacts to provide an improved RF mask performance. All of this was developed by the transmitter manufacturers, particularly Harris and BE were really involved with this in the early days. Some other important developments that funneled into HD radio, Mosley had developed their new generation of STLs, specifically for HD radio transport. The Starlink supported linear compressed and uncompressed audio, as well as a 760 kilobit per second bidirectional UDP stream over Ethernet, was something we really needed to be able to transport that rather fragile, what's called the E2X stream between the exporter at the studio and the transmitter, the exciter and the transmitter. Codec preconditioning also came about, eliminating things you don't need, things you're not going to process, particularly things that were above the, 10, 12 kilohertz level, being able to prepare the audio for what the HD radio codec was basically going to do to it and get more efficiency in the coding process. DeSequeira introduced an off-air receiver for the first time with HD radio that could actually do some FM and HD radio measurements. Also, at the same time, receiver manufacturers began jumping on the bandwagon. You had Kenwood, JVC, Polk, Boston Acoustics, all started coming out with their second generation receivers, which actually worked. Some of the first generations didn't work so well. And PAD data, the actual PSD, the program service data, was incorporated into that second generation of both receivers and transmitters and transmission system that the importer enabled. So this was the monolithic platform that we started out with, but something more was needed. We wanted installations to maximize. We needed to be able to maximize the data transport from the studio to the transmitter. We now had multiple audio channels to carry, and that was a lot of bandwidth or STL signals. So it was decided to maximize the throughput, the data throughput of the system, by separating the what's called the exporter functions, the actual encoding functions from the transmission side that brought about the Exporter, which we'll talk about here, and the X-Gen. So you had an Exporter and an X-Gen. The Exporter created the OFDM waveform signal and then transported that as a data stream over to out to the transmitter site. The exciter contained the X-Gen, which then actually created the modulation or the waveform. This was Gen 3, and Gen 3 is pretty much the standard now. This is what most of us are using for HD radio. Nautel, Broadcast Electronics, Continental, of course Harris, all developed systems around Gen 3, which consists of the very familiar to all of us, the importer, the exporter, and then the exciter with the X-Gen. That's the basically triad, three-part system of the HD radio system. That Gen 3 exporter that came out had all the hardware that we needed in it to do the compression, do the program service data, and basically put the signal together. It basically did everything that the monolithic exciter did except create the OFDM waveform or generate any on-channel RF. Excuse me a second. So the exporter was able to separate the two processes from the signal generation of the HD radio signal to the actual making of the OFDM waveform and putting it into RF. Essentially, the exporter is a Gen 2 exciter without the RF up converter and the digital up converters. In fact, the Dextar that we talked about a few minutes ago can really be converted into an exporter. We call it a Dexporter with just a basically a software key change, and a lot of those are still in use today as exporters. In the original implementation, it was a PC running Linux, and the same IRSS software as ran on the exciters. The new subsystem called the X-Gen was also introduced as part of this Gen 3 architecture, and it accepted the data, what's called the E2X data, which is just an IP data stream coming from the exporter across an IP data link into this device called the X-Gen. The X-Gen basically had a processor, a microprocessor, and a DSP that took in that data stream HD radio packets and converted those into the HD radio OFDM waveform that was then passed on to the digital up converter and then the RF up converter. So that was the architecture of the X-Gen that made all of this possible. We used a TI 6415 processor, a lot of SD RAM and some flash memory. Actually, though, a fairly simple concept, in concept, but took quite a bit of work to actually get a functioning system with the X-Gen. It takes that E2X data and converts it up, as I said, to the RF waveform. And that's actually what it looks like. In 2003, Ubiquiti released the X-Gen embedded code libraries to the manufacturers. That was based on that TI C64 family of devices. And out of that, we developed the X-Gen card. A lot of the manufacturers developed their own solutions. Most of them were TI C64 based. The X-Gen was actually one of the biggest developments of HD radio and really made the wider rollout of the HD radio system possible. And that also brought us to the FlexStar exciter in 2005. Harris brought out the FlexStar, which was the first X-Gen based exciter, and really began to move the needle as far as HD radio adoption. This actually made HD radio implementation pretty smooth and easy. There was still a lot of complexity in the system and a lot of expense. It took quite a bit of work to get these systems set up and talking across networks. It was all still PC driven in the exporter and in the importer. So in 2006, the NAB Fast Road Project approached several of the manufacturers as well as broadcasters and asked them to identify the most difficult pieces of trying to implement HD radio. And what they identified was the first item of business would be the exporter. The high cost of that exporter, because it was built on a modified server platform, was very relatively temperamental, had hard disk drives, prone to failures, difficult to set up. That was the first place to really attack and try and lower the cost and simplify the systems. So what was proposed was the third generation the third generation exporter. We had a lot of developments around the exporter. The data program, the additional program and data service content that was available to use the available bandwidth, more robust HD radio generation in the platform. And we also needed to reduce the cost and complexity of the studio transmitter length system, reduce the bandwidth, and also considerably simplify the configuration of the system. So with financial assistance from the Fast Road Technology Office, Ubiquiti, Harris, and the other manufacturers began working on the code necessary to develop the what was called the embedded exporter to replace the PC-based exporter. Again, this was done developed on a C67, or it was also done on the X86 processors. Ubiquiti introduced the libraries to the manufacturers in 2007, and we actually began working on these new embedded exporters. And we were supported, NAB supported us as well as Ubiquiti in getting these solutions to market. And that resulted in the Gen 3 HD radio embedded exporter, which we introduced at the 2008 NAB conference, along with Nautel, Continental, and Broadcast Electronics. So it's kind of the first time everybody pulled together there with a single solution. And it's been a really big success. It far simplified the installation, and a lot of stations are using these now, very robust, no fans, no hard drives, no moving parts. This has been a big driver in getting HD radio broadcast implementation out in the field. Basically, the embedded program exporter, to make it simple and powerful and make it very reliable, was all based on a single DSP with a CPU and then what we called the exporter interface that handled all the inputs and outputs. Just a very, very simple, robust device. Actually down to the level of an appliance now. So gone is the PC. We used an ARM9 processor as the microcontroller for the host controller and used the C67 floating point DSP. Along with the release of the exporter came a whole new framework. I mentioned the IRSS, the Ubiquiti Reference System. Was done away with, and we went to something called a framework design. The framework-based architecture came out from Ubiquiti, starting with version 4 that supported this new embedded exporter. All of the internal workings of the HD radio system were redesigned into three distinct frameworks. These were the AAS, or the application framework, the MPS, the main program service framework, and the control and management framework. At the very heart of this was something new called the HD protocol or HD radio protocol. The HDP unified all of the communications processes across the different platforms. Up until now, everything had sort of its own protocol from exporter to importer, and even the internal processes within the device were all just kind of handwritten jumbles. This actually brought everything into a standard protocol that both the Ibiquity and the manufacturing engineers could work with in a very predictable manner. But it touched virtually everything in the system. So for those of you who may have lived through this Gen 3 transition, going from the V3 versions of the HD Radio software to the V4 versions, you know, basically everything had to change. You had to change out the software in the importer, in the exporter, and in the exciter all at the same time. We had to do the same thing back in the labs. We had to recode everything basically at the same time. It was about a 2-year rollout to get all of this to work together. All of the new code basically incompatible with the old code. Hardware all still worked, but not with this new protocol. But the payoff is it's now much simpler, it's much more standardized and easier to roll changes and continue to update the system. At the same time, other developments were going on with other manufacturers around the industry. Other vendors were developing to support this Gen 2 architecture, to support more flexibility, more robustness, easier installation. Things like real-time adaptive pre-correction came into play. Higher power and more efficiency in the transmitters was really became a big effort because of the higher power, peak to average power necessary to transmit both the FM analog and the HD digital signals. We brought out something called the HD Link, an STL system, microwave, our 450 megahertz STL system, specifically designed to carry the multiple audio streams as well as that E2X data stream. Audio processors also started coming into being that were specifically designed around HD radio to support the main program services as well as the analog services. Omnia, Orban, several other manufacturers really jumped on in with new processors to support HD. The EAS system started taking notice. A lot of work was done around the emergency action notification system. A lot more receivers came out. Insignia, Sidel, and other in-car navigation systems began incorporating HD radio as part of their transmission system. And iTunes tagging came about. Certainly the multi-stream, multi-protocol playout systems from all the manufacturers, TRE, ENCO, all began supporting multi-stream playout. So a lot of developments were going on at this time to really bring HD radio forward. A lot of efforts at the same time, talking about hybrid crest factor reduction. We needed improved amplifier utilization because of the high peak to average power ratio of the HD radio as opposed to the CW-FM signal. It was desired to get more efficiency, more power utilization out of existing transmitters. The easiest way to turn a 40 kilowatt FM transmitter into a 20 kilowatt transmitter was to put HD radio on it. We all know that one. We worked on peak to average reduction algorithms, which you're seeing here is actually a CFR measurement at minus 10 dB, dBc. With about a 0.1% PAR, giving us about a 3.87 dB reduction. So a lot of intelligent clipping work went on there to improve the hybrid crest factor reduction algorithms that are used currently in the Ibiquity algorithms. Even at 10 dB, we were seeing as much as a 1.2 dB of peak reduction and about a 31% improvement in the amplifier utilization while still maintaining the magic number of about 14 dB MER. Asymmetrical sideband generation also started becoming a really hot issue just in these past few years to allow stations with this power increase. The power increase changed a lot of things. Some stations couldn't go to certainly 10 dB but of elevated sidebands, but everyone could go to 14. Some could go to 10. Well, could we do unequal sidebands for those cases where stations could raise sidebands to minus 12, minus 10 on one side and still maintain minus 14 on another side? So work went on in the generation of asymmetrical sideband generation. A lot of it's been done today using filtering external to the OFDM signal generation, and that we consider kind of inefficient. It's really not the place to do it where you really want to generate both the crest factor reduction and the asymmetrical sideband is actually within the OFDM generation process. So that's something that's been being worked on as part of this next generation that we're just about ready to talk about. Also, modulation error vector, MER calculations have become important. These are a measurement method to provide a really clear metric of how the digital signal to noise is performing, how much damage you're doing to both the data bearing and the reference carriers. In the system, basically what it does is it gives the engineer a grayscale of how much damage is being done to the signal, and in HD radio the minimum of that is 14 dB. And what you're seeing here is a constellation of about 14 dB MER. So that brings us to what's in the next generation. The next generation hardware platforms that we're considering, that we're working on. First of all, we want to do one physical design. One physical design, one implementation, both for HD, X-Gen, for both AM and FM. And we want to have, obviously, good performance. We want to get this to market. We want to get this out so we can keep the movement going forward on HD radio and keep the rollout going. We need a reference design that all the vendors can implement easily and sustainably with solid, reliable firmware updates. And obviously, it's got to be something that's cost effective to both develop, to sell, and to implement. Also, we need, in the rest of the world, we need DRM. Digital Radio Mondial is another digital format that's being used in a lot of places around the world. India, Europe, Russia are all looking at that as their digital platform. While some countries are looking at HD radio, many of them are looking at DRM as well. Very similar technology, similar architectures, but obviously different code bases. All of these need to be supported on the same hardware platform as well. We also want to be looking at the next generation of exporter and the next generation of importers. So the TI-64 processor in the current X-Gen really does not have the processing power that we need to accomplish all of the crest factor reduction, asymmetrical sideband, modulation error ratio measurements. Particularly the crest factor reduction takes quite a few iterations, iterations of the calculations to do the intelligent clipping and restoration of those waveforms. So very powerful DSPs are needed. And to accommodate the additional signal processing and the MER, we're looking at several new DSP devices. One of the things that we're looking at are dual ARM FPGAs, DSPs with ARM processors built in them, dedicated ARMs, C66 multi-core processors, C66 multi-core DSPs with internal processors. There's a lot to choose from out there right now. A lot of pros and cons to each, and of course it's changing every day. As soon as we decide on something, we see something else that actually could provide more capability. But we've kind of decided on an approach. We're working with Ibiquity on a new approach now. What's being undertaken is a new FPGA-based processor with an integrated ARM, basically in a single board configuration, much like the X-Gen we have today. You've got a signal processor and a host processor built together on this single device that will be the fourth generation X-Gen. We're working, as I say, on first prototypes now. Both the Ibiquity labs and our labs are working on these. We're actually hoping to have first of these rolling out of this fourth generation in our new Flexiva platform as early as spring this next year. By adding some additional mission-specific hardware, though, we can take this same platform and we can do some pretty interesting things with it. By adding an additional FPGA and the necessary I.O. Architecture, we can turn this device into an embedded exporter. We can also add a different I.O. and a different multiplexer, and we can make this device an embedded importer. And software is being worked on right now. Version 5 of the software from Ibiquity is actually being worked on for an embedded version of the importer, something that the industry has long been looking for to get off the PC platform of the importer. Or we could even do both. We could have the importer and exporter in a single device. And we could even do the importer, the exporter, and the X-Gen all in a single device and basically have this all in one exciter. So some very flexible options coming along here. And this is the kind of the exciting Generation 4 architecture that we're looking at as we continue to develop what's called the Flexiva. This is our new next generation FM digital exciter, and it has accommodations for this Gen 4 X-Gen card that are being worked on right now. And what this will offer in the same all-in-one card is, of course, dual Ethernet ports, asymmetrical sideband control, hybrid crest factor reduction, MER measurements, the host audio extraction, diversity delay control, remote control, integrated RTAC, having the real-time adaptive correction built into the X-Gen, spectrum display, being able to have full diagnostics capabilities, and also, as part of this development, HD radio single frequency networking is rolled into this as well. So a lot of work going on in the X-Gen and exporter areas. We're doing all of this to further integrate the HD radio systems, create better user experience. We've got new revenue streams that are out there, and broadcasters are demanding more robust systems and more reliable, easier to implement, and lower cost systems. Things like artist experience, iTunes tagging, the traffic services, electronic program guides, all of these are coming down the road, and we need this new fourth generation architecture to easily support all of this. So, all of the business models have kind of begun to reach a level of maturity that's demanding things be more robust and more reliable. Over the past three generations, there have been a lot of new innovations, a lot of new developments. Manufacturers have tried to leverage the best cutting-edge technology that we can at the time. Some of these advances have been in response to identified needs, things that we needed to do to take care of the marketplace. Others are challenging us to explore things we've never even thought about and new untapped possibilities. But these fourth generation systems are going to offer some new features, new capabilities. They're going to push our boundaries of the current models as to what we're doing now and how we implement these systems. And at the same time, going to give us new opportunities while becoming more reliable and more cost effective, easier to install, easier to maintain. So that's kind of it. I just wanted to give you a little glimpse into what the future of the next generation, what the past was, and the future of the next generation of the HD radio systems is looking like. Of course, it wouldn't be right not to thank Ibiquity for all their help with putting this together. And of course, the folks at Harris, we've got some great guys working there on some pretty advanced new features. So with that, I got a couple minutes left. Any questions about the state of things?
Hello, Mike. All right, the one casualty out of all of this is going to be the current legacy 950 megahertz STL band. We are migrating off of there for all but emergency backup services because, frankly, we don't have reliable wire services out to at least one of our transmitter sites, two of them actually.
Right.
We must have over the air. Therefore, we have had to migrate up to 5 and 6 and 12 and or 11 and 18 gigahertz in order to get our get the proper bandwidth signal for what we're doing. And that's the only observation I have, is that if when you decide to upgrade to HD and go to multicasting, you're going to find yourself inevitably, inexorably replacing your STL.
Yeah, and it very well could be. I mean, there's different solutions for it. Upgrading STL for more bandwidth is certainly right now one of the most popular, and maybe even in a lot of cases the only solution. But there is work afoot. We just have, and it's very doable. We just have to see what kind of reception we're actually going to get from our broadcaster customers. Ibiquity has been looking at for quite some time. We already do something called host audio extraction, where the 96 we could transmit out just basically a less than half a megabit data stream that can contain everything, but it's HDC encoded, it's limited to 96 kilobits, it's got the SBR, the whole gamut of HD radio encoding on it. But what if we could do that at, say, 128 kilobits with a better compression algorithm and transmit? So basically we would be using that, the HD radio stream pipe, as the transport for the whole, not only the HD radio signals, but also the analog as well.